Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We're in depth on whether Democrats have a new sense of identity to share with voters. But first, it's time for the political junkie. Hi, Ken. Welcome.
Good morning, Carrie.
Hey, you know, I'm interested in how you'd answer that Democratic image question. Do you have the sense that there is new thinking as Democrats figure out a way back to power in state capitals and the federal government?
Well, I don't know about new thinking. I think there are certainly newer opportunities, and it all stems from the fact that the president of the United States, in what should be his honeymoon period, still has a 41% approval rating. There are more and more indications, as we saw in last week's Kansas special congressional district, that even in rock-ribbed Republican Kansas, that the Democrats have a shot at winning those elections, the Republican incumbent and Donald Trump himself won that district with over 65 percentage points. And with last week's election was within seven. Tomorrow's race in Georgia, the one that Tom Price gave up to become HHS secretary, everybody is watching that too. And again, if the Democrats could come close or even, horrors, win, then the Democrats feel that maybe the House is in play in 2018, and it seems to be more spring in the Democrat step in recent weeks.
I mean, but does any of that mean they have figured out a new way to talk to voters about what they stand for, or does it just mean there are some early opportunities and they're feeling out how people are feeling about Donald Trump?
Well, you know, something that's an important question, and I don't know how to answer that because. You know, we saw that the Republicans for years were just chomping at the bit, waiting for either President Obama to be defeated or leave office, and then they could do what they wanted to do and what they promised to do. And when in the first opportunity they had with the health care bill, they failed miserably. So I'm saying that I don't know if the Democrats have this new message that's out there. I do know that they're given opportunities, that the Republicans are giving them opportunities. But clearly, What the parties don't seem to realize is that there's a reason you're in the minority, and there's a reason that the voters have rejected you in the past.
Right.
And it's also an opportunity to come up with a coherent message and offer that to the voters.
Here's a call on that, Ken, from Carl in St. Paul. Hi, Carl. What are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I guess I'm just sort of agreeing here. It's you need to stand in opposition. to be an opposition party, but you also need to stand for something, because if you don't stand for something, you stand for nothing. And it's really hard to vote for nothing.
Yeah, Ken, that's really what they have to figure out.
You know something, I've said several times on your show regarding Hillary Clinton, and I've been criticized, and I let me see if I can get this correct this time, because Hillary Clinton had been accused over and over during the campaign of not standing for anything but running an anti-Trump campaign.
Right.
Now, I disagree with that completely. I feel that there were 800,000 policy positions and in-depth policy proposals that she was presenting that separated herself not only from Donald Trump, but from President Obama as well. But there are a lot of people who just feel that she was running just against Trump, and Trump was running against Hillary Clinton. I don't know why I'm using that as an example, but I still think, though, that you have to listen to what the out party has to say if you're going to reward them for bringing them back into power. But not often, not every time does the out party, in this case the Democrats in Congress and the White House, have a coherent message.
You know, I wonder what role, or if there is a role, that you think President Obama has in this. Or does the party really have to look forward to younger leaders who would be emerging?
Well, it's hard to top anybody with President Obama's popularity. Even during the 2016 election, when both Clinton and Trump's numbers were pretty dismal, President Obama's numbers were still very, very high. Unlike President George W. Bush, who left office after 2008 with very low numbers because of the economy, because of the war in Iraq, because of, you know, the gas prices and Katrina and all the things that would be bedeviling the Republicans, Obama still has very high popularity. He has not used his his opportunity to stand up against, you know, to make it a battle, a daily battle against Donald Trump. But I don't think he feels he has to. I think given the fact that Trump is still very controversial, that half the, perhaps a good portion of his own Republican Party is not happy with the way the country is going, I think clearly President Obama is holding his tongue.
Ken Rudin is with us. If you've just tuned in, the political junkie joins us every Monday at this hour. And if you have questions or tweets for him, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at @CarrieNPR. By the way, we'll be in depth on that question of what Democrats search for, I don't know, a coherent message, a new identity, the way they communicate that identity. That's our in-depth conversation, and I'd love to hear from you on that as well. Vice President, yes, Ken.
Can I just say one quick thing about this? I mean, if you look at the way the Democrats have responded to, for example, President Trump's cabinet choices, there are some like Chuck Schumer and Claire McCaskill and other liberal members who have said, okay, there are some we'll oppose, and then there's some we'll support. There are progressive groups who say this, that is not acceptable, that the Democrats need to be the opposition party. But there are people like Claire McCaskill and other Democrats who are running in red states and Trump states saying, if we're just knee-jerk anti-Trump, we're not going to accomplish anything. And we have to work with him when he's right and oppose him when he's wrong.
Here's a listener on this question, Ken. 28-year-old Democrat here. Don't think Dems have a national identity crisis. They win the popular votes. Yes, but they don't end up winning state capitals. They don't end up winning governor's seats. They don't control the House or the Senate. Just to rest on the, well, we won the popular vote, doesn't give you much, does it?
That's true. It does give you something, though. I mean, Donald Trump will have that asterisk forever, as George W. Bush did. But then came 9/11 came along, and suddenly the country seemed to unite against a new president. Not that we need a 9/11 for us to unite around Donald Trump, but the Democrats do have a problem. Yes, they did win the popular vote in the presidential race, and yes, the district lines are drawn against them in the shaping of Congress, the way Congress district lines are run, but they have not won. They're not winning the governor's races. They are not winning in state legislatures around the country. The fact that Minnesota has a Republican House and Senate seems anathema to many progressives who say, wait a second, Minnesota is a state that hasn't gone for a Republican for president since Nixon in 72. Why do they have Republicans in the state legislatures? So obviously the Republicans are doing something right, and the Democrats have to figure out what that is.
You know, Ken, I want to note that Vice President Pence is in Asia this week, and there's a lot of discussion about the message that he carried from the president about the time for strategic patience. That's a reference to how President Obama handled North Korea is over. Here's my question. What's your sense of how different in the end this administration is going to behave on North Korea? They might sound different, but is their behavior really going to be all that different?
Well, they certainly sound different. They absolutely do. And the fact is, you know, that everyone from the National Security Advisor, General McMaster, to Vice President Pence, to Trump's tweets in themselves, all suggest that the era of just ignoring it or turning a blind eye or let's see how this works out, it's not working out. Nothing so far has stopped President Kim in North Korea. He's talking more and more about nuclear, you know, launching nuclear attacks on the United States. Now, for President Trump to say, well, I'm not going to back down, we're not going to back down, sounds like he's inviting World War III. But at the same time, he is meeting with China. He met with the president of China.
Right.
He seemed to realize that, as in his words, it's not so easy regarding what China has to deal with North Korea. So there is a lot of bluff and bluster in Trump. He is that kind of guy. And we saw it during the campaign. I'm going to bomb the X out of ISIS, he said over and over again. And we did see that gigantic bomb in Afghanistan. But ultimately, They were still smart, intelligent, we like to think, military leaders who realized the risk to not only, they realized the risk to world peace and the security of the United States, and I suspect nothing rash is going to actually happen.
You know, I really, there has not been much coverage about, or maybe I should say in-depth coverage of what the consequences of that huge bomb in Afghanistan were, because I think North Korea has pushed it off. But so the White House is saying what? They killed 36 or 38 ISIS.
I think the number's up to 90-something,
okay.
But whatever, yeah.
I mean, the biggest bomb short of a nuclear... I want more, you know, investigative context around what using a bomb that size... Forget about the fact that you get to go on TV and say we used the biggest bomb ever. What the consequences and what the results really were of that? Maybe you've seen something I haven't.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen anything that anybody else hasn't seen, but I will say that according to military, you know, advisors and experts, they say this bomb did exactly what it was supposed to do. It was not meant to wipe out 100,000 people or anything like that. It was aimed to disrupt and destroy tunnels and, like, basically all the tunnels where in Afghanistan where the enemy fighters are getting together and working out of, they were destroyed from within, and all these things were destroyed. So I think from what I've heard, the object was not, everybody said, well, only 36 ISIS fighters were killed, and maybe it's 90, whatever the number is. But I think militarily, it did accomplish what it wanted to accomplish.
Okay.
But look, I mean, war is still war, and I don't think we're any closer to winning. And I don't know what winning in Afghanistan means, just like I don't know what winning in Syria means either, even though we did bomb that airfield.
Ken, here's your mystery newsmaker sound. And this is someone who has, perhaps a little surprisingly, become pretty influential in White House foreign policy. Listen.
Everyone thinks that I'm ambitious, and everybody thinks I'm trying to run for something, and everybody thinks I want more. And the truth of it is, I'm just passionate.
But you wouldn't rule out that someday you might run for the White House.
I can't imagine running for the White House.
You really can't?
I really can't.
Who is that, Ken?
I don't know.
Nikki Haley.
Oh, you know something? I was going to say Nikki Haley, and that's interesting. Now, Nikki Haley, of course, was the former governor of South Carolina. She's of Indian descent. She was born in this country. She's an interesting character because, remember, before she was appointed the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., she was one of those never Trump people.
Exactly.
She did not like Donald Trump.
Exactly.
And yet you know how Donald Trump feels about loyalty. But she is as aggressive, as hawkish, as Trumpish sounding as anybody in the administration. So it's interesting to hear them talk about her for a higher office. It's interesting, yes.
A call here back on the identity of the Democrats, Ken, from Al in Eden Prairie. Hey, Al. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, guys. I got a quick question, what your thoughts are. It seems like the Democrats, when I think the Democratic Party, I'm an independent, and all I think of when I think of the brand is nothing but identity politics. And I've heard, you know, it mentioned about that. And, you know, it seems like the response from steadfast Democrats is, no, that's not a problem. Everything is cool. And we're going to fight identity politics from here to eternity. And I think that if they continue to do that, I think they're going to end up with the same results they've had in the past. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, let me give you a perfect example, and this is going back to the Howard Dean, when Howard Dean was chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and he talked about the 50-state strategy. Last week in Kansas, the DCCC basically felt that the Democrats didn't have a shot at winning that election, and they pumped no resources or very little, few resources into that race that was held by Mike Pompeo, now the CIA director. And the Democrat only lost by 7 points, 7 percentage points. And a lot of Democrats feel that had the party gone into that district with knocking on doors, what elected Nancy Pelosi speaker, what elected Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012, that kind of grassroots stuff was sorely missing in Kansas. And so it's one thing to say that we're on the ascendancy, Donald Trump is, you know, unpopular, he only has 41% approval rating. It's another to get their act together. And again, so there are a lot of Democrats who say, well, if we really were doing what we were supposed to have been doing, we would have had a real clear shot at Kansas. And that's why so many people are looking at tomorrow's election in Georgia, because theoretically, they can win this race. This was a district that Mitt Romney won by 27 points in 2012, and Trump won by 1.5 points in 2016.
And Ken, didn't Newt Gingrich represent this district for a long time?
He was first elected in 1978, and the Democrats have had it, and the Republicans have held it ever since. But there were demographic changes going on there. There's changes about how they feel about Donald Trump, as we saw in 2016. And shockingly enough, the Democrat who's the top Democrat who's running by a guy by the name of John Ossoff.
Yeah.
He's talking about the fact that I was endorsed by John Lewis. And to think of in a Republican district that was carried by Newt Gingrich, carried by Tom Price, and I'm talking about being endorsed by John Lewis, it sounds like something is happening. But again, one more thing: we always overplay these special elections. It could be one district only, and we could have a special election in 2 weeks from now, and the Republicans win it handily. So we'll see what this means.
I have one quick point on that, though. What do you think voters may think about all the outside money that's come in, especially for the Democrat?
Well, he still raised a lot of money within the district, yes, but he's raised $8.3 million, overwhelmingly amount from around the country, from Democrats and progressives around the country. So there is resentment of outside interference. But look, Club for Growth is on the air 24 hours a day in that district too, which is outside the district, not only attacking Ossoff, but also attacking the Republican frontrunner because she's not conservative enough. So in a special election with so much at stake, with so much bragging rights at stake, outside money is key.
Ken, I'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.